This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
And hello, Hearts of Oak. Thank you so much for joining us on another news review. And I'm delighted to have Richard Voubes, the Bold Explorer, back with us once again. Richard, thank you for your time today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for asking me. I hope I'm going to be of some use. I don't keep up with the mainstream narrative, so might be a bit going, oh, really? Is that what's going on?
Well, I think people, obviously, if they follow your YouTube channel, that's what they will find. And I think you probably discuss, not necessarily, I think there are different ways of looking at what's happening. Some is looking at the breaking news moment by moment, and the other side is looking at the concepts and ideas and themes, I think, that we're seeing. I think you focus more on that theme side. But maybe if the viewers, maybe our US viewers, not come across you, do you want to just mention a little bit of what they can find on those videos, some of the things you cover, some of the ones you've done recently, maybe?
Yes. One of the themes that I'm sort of very interested in, particularly this year going forward, is the food theme, food security, what we're going to do. It does seem, if one looks up in this country, certainly down on the south of England where I am, they're spraying the skies, which seems to be preventing crops from growing because the sun's not getting through, but it's also seeding a lot of rain. And the rain is decimating the land at the moment. So we're hearing that winter crops are not growing. Potatoes are in late. And it seems to me that there is a food shortage coming. So we may well be having to do something about that. So recently I've been visiting people who are doing alternative types of farming rather than the monoculture. So one of the themes is the farming that relates to things like the supermarkets and the big corporations that have a hold on us. We very often have, at the moment, we've been starting this thing called The Lawful Remedy, which is a live show, but of course you can pick it up after the event, which looks at different ways to push back against some of the legal nonsense that is thrust upon us. And looking for lawful remedies. And we have a series of panelists who come on. And in the live show, the viewers can actually ask questions and say, I've got this problem. What would be the best way out of it? So we're doing a bit of that, promoting various events up and down the country that either people have asked me to be part of or that are going on, which is always great. We had the Great Resist last week, which was a great success. And I know Liz Phillips, who ran that, was very, very pleased, and she's already got the next one going. It never bloody stops. That's the thing. There's always something to talk about. But I suppose the main theme of the channel is trying to look at what is behind all the big stories, not so much the things as they happen, but the truth of where we are, who we are, perhaps part of our spiritual journey, and the big lies. We had John Hamer on recently, who talked about the falsification of history. He's written a series of books of how things have been told to us in this mainstream narrative, but actually those events have been spun in a certain way to give the appearance of something when something else is going on. So it's kind of all of that.
Yeah, certainly a lot. But let's jump in and look at some of the news. I know, Richard, you said you don't follow it avidly, but I think they all fit around different issues that are happening. This one, which was happening today and from last night, so by the time this goes out on Saturday, a day later, who knows what might happen, but this is Yousef Humza, the First Minister of Scotland, and in a group with the Greens up there, he's kicked the Greens out, got a minority government trying to cling on, only been there a year. And I think the SNP have certainly moved away from a party wanting kind of freedom from England, that nationalism, to very much a woke party, very much on the left, progressive. But what are your thoughts to what's happening up north of the border, Richard?
Well, it's a good question. I haven't been up to Scotland for a hell of a long time, actually, but we are going up to Scotland later this year, which will be lovely to do, meeting up, funnily enough, with Barbara O'Neill, who was ousted out of Australia, and I've got an interview lined up with her. But in terms of the party, these sort of politics, they do leave me a bit cold because people are, they're all shifting for a power. I personally think all of this is going to come to a disastrous end all relatively soon. I can't give it a time zone. It just seems that there are so many things behind the scenes that are shifting, that these puppets becoming more obvious that they're puppets and they're just moving space around and they're trying to sell the mainstream story to keep people interested in it. But I think I'm much more interested to know why so many of the MPs have stood down, said they're not going to be part of the new government. Where are they going? Are they accountable? Those sort of things, to the great harms that have been pushed on us. So I have no idea really what's going on up in Scotland. I'll be completely honest with you. I don't have a television. I don't no longer listen to the radio. My information is, I'm not really looking at the mainstream stories because I just think that they're all a pack of lies anyway. And I think they're there to keep us occupied.
I agree. I kind of found interest in watching North of the Border, watching the kind of conservative collapse, the SNP taking absolute dominance and they can do what they want. And it seems as though in Scotland and probably the parties in Wales, Labour and think Plaid Cymru, they seem to be more interested, as do the Conservatives, maybe less so, more interested in these nonsense ideas than they do actually about the bread and butter issues and running the economy. They're kind of running after these unicorns, these latest ideas. I know the Conservative Party here in England, it's becoming that way as well. That's not opting out and pointing the finger at Scotland, but they seem to be further on this, I guess, the train of madness. I don't know what you think.
Well, I mean, I just do wonder if these places like Wales and Scotland are the sort of testing beds. I mean, what with the 20-mile-an-hour speed limits, which I gather in Wales is now they're quietly getting rid of some of that because a lot of people said, hang on a minute, this is a stretch too far. And of course, we saw a lot of that, the transgender stuff being pushed left, right and centre in Scotland, although these days all of this seems to be on the same page. And it's all coming to dehumanise us, to keep us apart, the old divide and conquer. And we're all looking at the differences of things instead of actually saying what is similar and what things can we build on and what is good for us. So, yeah, I mean, I am surprised more and more that people have not uprisen and just ousted all of these ministers in this for all this nonsense thinking. I mean, the thing that I always find quite strange is what you and I would have laughed at 20, 30 years ago when someone was suggesting some of these ideas and we would have just gone, oh, this is ridiculous. Of course, it's not going to take hold. People are much more sensible and that common sense is surely going to wipe the table with these people. But people are so frightened to say anything. They're self-censoring. And so these unicorn stories, these nutty ideas seem to be getting more hold and everyone's scared to say anything, that even the corporations are embracing it. And you think, oh my God, where are we going?
I'll show a picture later on of what we have in London. I bumped into one of the candidates. I'll show that at the end just to show the lunacy of where we are in British politics. But up in Scotland, they had the new hate crime legislation that came out on the 1st of April, and it was not an April Fool. And this is the Free Speech Union talking about it. And they say Police Scotland have recorded 9,374 hate crime reports since 1st of April, yet logged only 79 Orwellian non-crime hate incidents, which are a pre-crime file that sits on your record. The country's national force have clearly watered down their draconian guidance, and we think we know why. I mean, this rush to criminalize feelings, I guess. So hit is a feeling. I think hit is a natural response to bad things that happen. And I think I worry whenever we legislate and start criminalizing emotions or feelings. But it's this kind of shutting down common sense discussion and debate. And you said self-censoring. I think that's very much the case. But we've also seen hate crime legislation here in the UK. People visited for tweets they put up or debates they've had online, and Scotland have gone a bigger step forward. But and the police, that we were told the police would be investigating every single one. Obviously, they don't have enough officers to investigate 9,374 hate crimes. But yeah, what are your thoughts on the whole hate crime legislation shutting down the free speech?
Well, all of this business about hate crime, I mean, it's an emotion. It is an emotion. And where is the victim if you just hate something? I mean, I'm not very keen on pineapples. I would say I hate pineapples, but I'm not very keen on them. And is a pineapple going to be upset if I don't like it very much? I mean, it's all sort of weird mind control stuff. But I think the bigger agenda is that you've got to ask why. Why would this be taken at all seriously by people who are in a profession who obviously must have gone to some universities, let's not go down that road, but they've got some sense of what the world is about. But I think that this is pushing down, actually, behind all of this, if you go further back, is towards this sort of idea that we're all going to have chips in our brains to help us think correctly, because we can't, as a human species, we can't be allowed to have these terrible thoughts where you might have a bit of road rage, or you might hate somebody for praying on the street or doing something against the narrative. And so to help us, because we're so unable to survive in this modern world, it would be good to have a chip that is correcting our thinking, or some form of drug to assist us. So I think all of this is normalizing what we would ordinarily have said was normal behavior, to sort of, I'm quite happy to hate, you know, I hate someone doing this, or I hate that, but I'm not going out and hitting them. I'm not making a physical thing. But I think this is just normalizing a behavior that they've made into an extreme, and saying, oh, you because you hate something, therefore that's not healthy. We need to adjust you, and we can do it in these different ways. Like with so much of this normalizing many of the things, the sexualization of children, for example. I mean, the more that it's that people can talk about it and argue about it, it soon becomes part of popular culture. And in a way, that's why I don't really talk about these sort of things on my show, because all we're doing is falling into the trap of normalizing that this is the kind of conversation, so that you'll soon turn on the television and an advert will come up, and you won't see a white middle-class male. Oh, no, that's true. That's the situation now. A white middle-class male does not exist in the advertising on television, because in their minds we don't exist, and we've been normalized out of the conversation. So I think this is just, again, it's getting a sort of consciousness of people going, it's acceptable to deal with hate crimes, whereas burglaries and people nicking your car and all those sort of real crimes, or knife crime in London and things like that, they don't want to do anything about. It's a bit difficult for them.
I agree 100%. I think you, what you do is you try and look a little bit further down the road and say, well, this is what's coming, as opposed to, well, they've just reported today, so it's too late. Those chips are already in, or the weather has already changed, or so it is looking ahead. And I've certainly found it fascinating, and especially the common law, which I know zero about, and I've enjoyed delving into that a little bit. But yeah, you know what it's like when you've got enough rabbit holes that you're actually down under. And as I said, at Liz's thing, it felt like 20 rabbit holes, and these were all essential. And maybe ask you, Richard, how do you decide what to focus on? Because there is so much, and you do a wide range off that he was on a different range of topics. And it sometimes can be difficult to keep in focus one or the other, but you covered all. Is it with different guests you come across, different people you know? Is it with things people send you? I mean, how do you decide what areas to cover each day?
I should describe anyone who hasn't seen what I do. I do a monologue in the morning, which goes out on the channel, and then I've usually got a guest in the afternoon. The two are not related at all. Sometimes, if I know I've got a guest about a certain particular subject, I might fashion a monologue to sort of whet the audience's appetite. And really and truly, if I was on top of my game, I would do more of that. But sometimes I just have something will pop into my head that I feel is important, something from emails that I've read. For example, as we record this, this morning I did a video which was about the chemtrails. I've done a lot about chemtrails and geoengineering over the past. I've had people like Dane Wigington on the show, who's in America, who's been researching this for like 20 years and has been keeping a record of it. But because we've had this and last year, the end of last year and this year, the wettest winter I can possibly remember. We've not really had very cold days. We've had mild days, but so much rain. I mean, rain in the Gulf, for goodness sake, you know, which has surprised people. And it's clear to me from what I've read, and it may not be clear to other people, and people may say I'm just a conspiracy theorist, that this is to do with the global engineering that is being done. And I mentioned about food shortages and things and all of that. And so today's video was just simply, I walked out and I looked at it and again, not a bloody again. It does seem as if we are permitted one day of sunshine every 2.5 weeks. And then we get cloud cover. And 4 years ago, March 2020, when we were all stuck inside, peering out the window, thinking it was dangerous to go and even open the window and breathe in case some virus attacked us, it was glorious sunshine for the whole 3 weeks. I mean, it was ridiculous. Now, I know the weather changes, of course, from year to year, but this particular year, it's just, if people haven't noticed, I mean, it's right above us. It's in the sky. It's right in front of our faces. So sometimes it's exasperation that the message isn't getting clear, and I'll do a monologue on that. Sometimes it's something somebody sent me. That would be a sense of urgency that will be important. I try to do a range of, I don't specialize in anything, so I do a range of certain things. The things I don't touch are things like the Middle East, the Ukraine war. I don't know anything about those, and I know I'm going to make mistakes. And, you know, people, I think historians will look back at those sort of people and go, oh, all I know about that area is that there are bankers, hidden bankers, who are funding both sides and causing these wars effectively. They're going to do very nicely. They're stirring up the pot because that's how you keep people divided. And you're seeing people in the Middle East on both sides of the coin, and whichever side you're on, there's somebody else who's going to say you're on the wrong side. And the only people I'm really worried about are the innocent people who are caught in the middle, who don't want a war, who don't want to be killed, and all of that. And yet we don't really get to talk about those. We just get to talk about the two fractions and how they're pulling against each other. So it is a wide range, and I really can't tell you. I mean, the guests, a lot of those come out of the woodwork. Most of them come out of the woodwork. They say, I do this, or I can recommend so-and-so, or I've met them at the very many places where I've been asked to talk, and suddenly, and then there's some like good old Mark Steele, who talks about 5G. And I've said to him, I'd love to have you on the show, but YouTube will shut me down if I put you on, because they don't want that information coming out. And so there are certain areas, and on YouTube, you're always dancing on eggshells a little bit, because, I mean, I've had two strikes already, both of them medical misinformation, apparently. Don't trust anything I say, because it's all wrong.
I could delve into that, but I won't. So let's jump on to immigration. That's fun, because I'm not very sure what you think on some of these, so we'll throw it in. And it's this picture, which I thought was very funny. First flight of deportees departs UK for Rwanda. And
if only that were true.
Here by tomorrow it could be. So
yeah.
But so you've got a bunch of politicians. There's Poole, Diane Abbott saying, are we there? Yes. Keir Starmer, leader of the Labour Party in the front, beside Gary Lineker, the ex-footballer whose word is gospel in all these matters. What are your thoughts? Obviously, the Rwanda, and we'll bring up a story about one of the boatloads and people dying and what that means. But simply on the government, I find it weird because I'm very much for a secure border, but I also don't know if sending everyone to halfway around the world, if that really fixes the problems. Seem to dump it on someone else's doorstep, which does seem a little bit unfair. Although I think the government should have the right to do what it wants to people who come in the country illegally to remove them. But what are your thoughts? We're told Rwanda is the thing that fixes everything. All these people who've got in legally, we just send them to Rwanda and everything's fixed. And I don't know if it's that simple.
No. Well, the first thing I would say is, who's making these decisions? Is it the people who live in the land, i.e., you know, us? Is it us who should sort of have some idea of what we do with people, rather than leave it to a bunch of people who don't seem to be able to, they can, I was going to say they can't operate a party in a paper bag or whatever the phrase is. I've forgotten the phrase now, put on the spot. And yet clearly they can have parties when everybody else is locked down. We saw that, of course. This is where the whole thing is orchestrated anyway, because if you can lock people down in their houses in March 2020, and yet they can't stop people coming over in rubber boats. It seems you can get 60 million people stuck behind there, given the fear of God that they mustn't walk out their house, they'll catch some horrible thing. Yet, people coming in dribs and drabs every single day that we can't do something about. That, to me, that's just complete nonsense. Of course we can. We could have done right from the start, but we've sort of set a precedent now where we get the NRLA going out to fish them out the sea and everybody has to come, and every now and again somebody drowns and it's a terrible story. Those poor migrants, why didn't we do something about them? Now, I don't know them. I've never been able to speak to them. I haven't, there's a lot of them to have a conversation with them. I've got nothing personally against any of them. I'm sure they're all very nice people. But if anything, if they are genuinely fleeing from the countries that they're coming from, and it may be, as somebody said to me, actually most of them are men of a certain age, maybe they just don't want to fight in their country, and so they're trying to get away from actually having to fight. And I don't blame them if that's the case. I wouldn't want to go on the front line. So I'm on their side for that. If there are things like the Kalergi plan that's been said, that's to sort of get rid of the white race, well, that's a different thing. I forget the name of the company that's looking after them in the hotel, the biggest.
Is it Serco or?
That's right, enemy of the state, I was going to call them, but whatever you want to call them. I think that we've got to go to the source. It's like all these things. It's like the NHS sticking plasters over problems and saying, here's a pill that will save you for now. We need to go back to the source and say, why are these people fleeing? And what it would be better to be going, okay, come over here. We'll train you up with the necessary skills. Go back to your country and make your country great. That to me, now, again, I don't know all the ins and outs. I've just struggled to understand what's going on in England in this time, let alone on the rest of the world. But I think that would be useful. A lot of the sort of nonsense that we get is, oh, but they're all doctors or they're nurses and this sort of stuff. And I think, well, in that case, you're doing like a brain drain, aren't you? You're doing resources. You're taking. We're happy to keep taking people from other countries. What are their countries going to do when all their doctors and nurses have disappeared? We should be training up the people in this country and giving ourselves pride that we can actually run a decent health service with people who are already here, rather than helping third world countries or lesser people than ourselves be even more depleted. So I think most of the logic here is all the wrong way round. But I think the graphic that you put up there is where Rwanda could come in very useful. There's a plenty of politicians and people that really and truly should not be in this country whatsoever. And it does seem like 100 or so of them are already stepping down to escape somewhere.
Well, yeah, on the first plane load, they should maybe test it out and see if it all works.
Give them another jab or something just to help them on their way.
Well, at least a jab and a booster. So at least double it up. Come on, Richard.
Yeah.
Let me bring this story in. And the weird thing was I actually saw this, and I do have to admit to having a TV. But I did see this when it was happening. For whatever reason, I'd flicked it on. And it was the BBC. Because sometimes I do enjoy watching BBC News to see what they are saying, to see how they report things and how they push things. But they were filming, and you can see the image on the top. That's exactly what it was like in the dark. The French police were watching as a BBC camera crew filmed this dinghy. And then all these other people got in the boat, and it went out. And then it's partially sunk. Five people died in the end. And the BBC were all excited about this story. Seemingly it happened on the day the Rwanda bill was going through, which did seem to be miraculous time in the BBC for one of the first times film a boat going over on the day it's going through. And on that day, five people die. It all seems to fit together. But this, Richard, this whole thing of how, the organized gangs, the people smuggling, when you realize how lucrative business it is, and it does seem as though the French and the British, they just sit and they watch this. We are a draw for these people, but both governments seem to be actively involved in promoting this people trafficking, which really ruins people's lives in the end. But and it could be stopped at a moment, couldn't it, Richard?
Well, and it should be stopped. Absolutely. I don't know why it's going on. I mean, I don't get it, because it could be stopped if the will was there, but the will is not there. And it just seems to be the most simplest thing. I mean, golly, you know, we stopped the Nazis coming over in Operation Sea Lion back in 1940 or 41, whenever it was. And we managed to stop them from coming over. We had our own little boats going the opposite way. And I don't understand why we're not working really with the French government and patrolling the beaches and things and actually just flushing this out. I mean, it seems as if, like so many things, the main members of the public are being given a load of old nonsense. They've told that one story and we're all said to just accept it. And it seems that people do. I mean, people lined up to have something put into their arm and they just went, oh, well, we better do this. And it's as if we've become so dumb, so stupid, that we just go, oh, well, what can we do? I love the fact that on the, you know, every now and again, you'll see these videos on the beach at Dover or around that on the Kent coast or the East Sussex coast. There are people out there, you know, even challenging them as they come up the beach going, why have you come? I mean, at least ordinary members of the public seem to have a bit more common sense to go up and say, oi, what are you doing here? And where are you going? And why did you throw your passport away and your telephone and all that kind of ID? I find the thing has gone on now for so long, I kind of lost interest. And maybe that's what it's about. Maybe it is about even those who are interested in it just going, oh, there's got to be something else to talk about because it's become a bit dull. But it is so important.
It is. It's about normalizing it and making sure other stuff's discussed and it happens. And it's good that we have too much money. So I think that we put $3 billion into new hotels a couple of months ago. So it's just as well we have too much money in the country, Richard, and we can actually pay for this.
Well, let me put it this way. There's a book that was written in the 70s. I've got it and I can't remember the title. And I keep referring to this book. The book was written by, it was a French chap who wrote this. And the premise of the story is that one day rolling up in the south of France comes an ocean liner. And this is an old ocean liner and it's filled to the gunwales with men mostly from sub-Saharan Africa. And there's about 5,000 of them on this boat. And the boat can't quite get in, so they all jump off and they start swimming to the shore, and they just come, 5,000 of these people. And then another boat comes, same day, and another boat comes. So in other words, thousands upon thousands come in one day, and then the next day, and the next, and they keep coming. And it's and so you seem to have the situation that we're in, which is protracted over, say, 5 years. But they're saying, what happens if this influx of people comes in 1 or 2 days or a few weeks? What do you do? Well, I got a few chapters into the book, and then I found it too depressing to read this because it was very difficult. And I flipped to the end of the book, and at the end of the book, and this is the really harsh thing that gets you, the people in France were taking to the wall with guns and shooting these people to stop them from coming. Not that they had anything against the people, it's just the sheer numbers became too much, and it's you or me. And one wonders, by spreading this out over 5 years, whether that's a way that the public do not realize the extent of what's happening. Whereas if they all came in one day, whether they're good people or not, doesn't make any difference, you know. It's just the sheer number of people coming in that you suddenly go, oh, my God, what do we do? How do we deal with you? And as you say, they're all sitting in, well, they're all sitting, I mean, some are in the black market doing all sorts of various things, and we don't know why they're all here, but a significant number are in hotels up and down the countryside, and we're paying for it. But at some point, you know, something's got to crack, isn't it?
You would think so, but I think we've got 5 years with Keir Starmer in Labour, and I wonder if it will crack. I mean, if you keep voting the same way, then you're going to get the same level of stupidity, and I think that's where we are in the UK. But I don't know what it'll take to wake up.
I wouldn't be voting at all.
No, well, I will. I look and I can't see anyone that is actually worthwhile walking the 5 minutes to my local voting booth and actually putting X beside. I can't. I think the last time I went and looked. I looked at the list. I looked at the list again. Well, no, I just walked away because it was for the first time I went thinking, I wonder who's standing. And someone who was in UKIP for 5 years, love politics. And yet you look and you think, none of these people are actually going to do a thing. So it's not worth it. You walk away. And that's what many people are asked.
Somebody suggested to me, you know, they said, well, why don't we put things like none of the above and all of that on the thing? And which is, you know, one option. But somebody suggested to me, said, better than that is to, when you go into the booth, take the slip with the various choices and slip the slip into your pocket and just walk out. Don't put it into the counting box so that when they go to count, there's tons of these slips missing, which will cock up the system. So if, you know, it's 500, hang on a minute, we've only got 200. We've only got 200. What happened? So in other words, you've really shown that you're not interested by not even bothering to put the slip into the so-called closed private box.
That could be a way, actually, of getting around it. It could be. I will bring up another one, and it is this, which is a story on the trans stuff, on teachers, and it is this weird, peculiar story. Parents fury after trans supply teacher explained their gender identity to 7-year-old pupils and told them, I'm so gorgeous because I've had to put makeup on and had a shave. This is in the Mail from the 24th. I know a number of other papers covered it. I said, sub-teacher at Bitcairn C of E Primary School discussed trans identity with pupils, and many parents had said their children were left confused, as a 7-year-old would be. Now, there are a whole load of things. As a Christian, it's so sad watching the Church of England descend into utter chaos and oblivion and against everything it teaches on truth and morality. And this was Church of England School. And they sent a letter to the parents to say, well, we're a diverse school, and if a teacher comes and they're trans, then of course that's absolutely normal, and as parents you don't really have a right to complain. But it's the bonkers state where we are, where as a seven-year-old class you've got a teacher that comes who's a man but dressed up as a woman and telling the kids about it. No wonder our children are confused in society.
Absolutely. I mean, pull your kids out of school. Yeah. I mean, if my kids are now in their 30s, but I have grandchildren, but unfortunately my son thinks I'm a conspiracy nut, so he won't listen to me. But pull your kids out of school. Why would you subject this to it? I mean, you know, school, firstly, is not a place for children, because the way that the curriculum and the way everything is structured is to make the children a good slate, good state slaves. So that's, you know, we're making everybody force them down one type of thinking. And as we said earlier and repeated now, we're normalizing behavior, which 20 years, 30 years ago would have been seen to be very reprehensible. And we're normalizing it for children so that they grow up. Somebody dressing up and saying, you know, I'm gorgeous because I've put makeup on and had a beard and shaved my beard, should not be anywhere near children at all. In fact, the thing that we've seemed to have lost is not just complaining about, we don't complain enough, but we're not sort of pushing that away enough. What we're not doing is celebrating the things that actually matter, like family. We're not celebrating enough and saying, look, okay, if you've had somebody in there who's had to shave and put lipstick on and all the rest of it, let's have a proper family in there, a two-parent family with, what is it, 2.5 children, you know. You can decide whether you want the legs or the head half in there on that demonstration. But, you know, let's have what we know and has been for centuries or from millennia, a good system, a mother and a father. And yes, they can change their roles a bit. You know, the father used to be the one that would bring the money in. The mother has the nurturing ability. And let's face it, she is the one in the past that used to have the boobs that would provide the milk and all the important stuff in the child's early life. I know men might want those, but they can't provide the nutrients for a child. So, you know, get out of it and get back to doing what you should be doing. But what I'm trying to say is we don't celebrate the things that are important. We're too busy sort of moaning about the nonsense they're pushing at us and going, oh, that's an outrage, or it's an outrage. But I would, and then giving these minorities the airtime and the credibility or helping to normalize it, instead of what we should be doing is normalizing what is normal. And that's, again, I think we're getting misdirected to sort of moaning about stuff which is irrelevant and not promoting more and more. So newspapers and TV and mainstream media should be the ones that we attack for putting this content out there. We don't need, it's not news. It's not important. It's not relevant. What's much more important is about the stuff we're losing and the good things in nature and for nurture and in school. But yeah, get kids out of schools for one thing, and homeschool. And we need to change all the laws about how you can homeschool and allow kids to run free, which they used to do. I mean, schools only sort of came in the sort of mid-1800s with Christian schools and what have you, and was very laudable back then as an idea. And it's been hijacked as a way to keep children on a certain path. So they no longer have critical thinking skills. They're not given common sense. They're not even taught proper grammar anymore. They're not taught about the English Constitution. They're not taught about how to do all the important things. They're just taught all this crap. And so they, you know, schools as an institution should be crushed.
Yep.
Closed down, bulldozed, crushed. Sorry. radical. I'm quite radical in my thought. I was never like this. I was never like this, Peter. It's just, the more you start to see the evil that is unfolding everywhere and people just going along with it. And of course, you know, as soon as you say anything like this, they just think you're mad. But we are in a year of the great revelation, and all of this stuff is being revealed slowly to us. And people have got to start waking up and seeing that this is not healthy. This is the lies, the mucking up of the mind, and the separating of us, instead of bringing us together and saying, and I said this before, what can we agree on? What things are healthy for us? And mothers and fathers and children, and teaching them worldly wisdom to think correctly and things like that. That's what we should be thinking about, not all this other stuff. And the fact that we allow them to do it, or even give them airtime, is a nonsense.
I agree. One of the past guests we've had was Mike Fairclough, and great former teacher, one of the maybe only head teachers stood up against the mandates for children and closures, and very much about getting kids out into the open air, connecting again with the world, and absolutely great teacher. And he's just done a book. We'll have him on soon, but it's great to have some knowledge, some common sense, I guess, from those in the system. I want to get your thoughts on electric cars.
Lovely electric cars. We all want one, don't we?
Well, it's this. This was from CNN. A brutal elimination round is reshaping world's biggest market for electric cars. And it is about China flooding BYD, the huge global player, I think second only to Tesla. But they talk about China having 200 EV electric vehicle manufacturers grappling with oversupply. I know BYD are sending ships of these cars, which are going to be really cheap, into Europe. The Tesla share price has fallen very much in the last couple of weeks, with car sales, EV car sales, actually falling for the first time in the discussion. Well, has the world decided that they don't need these anymore, with all the major issues around them, with actually getting batteries, but the cost of it, the how heavy they are, actually maintaining them. I mean, the being able to go to the corner shop and back, and that's about it, not working in the cold. But this will move away from the internal combustion engine, which seemed to have done very well for well over 100 years, can even take things into the sky and fly. That's how amazing they are. What are your thoughts? This massive push that we all must have a car with a battery in it within about 5 years. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, again, it's all part of the big plan to actually get us off and out of vehicles altogether. I mean, it's the big myth of global warming, that man-made global warming. It's all our fault that the CO2 is the problem, the gas of air, of course, that we all need, and they want to lower that. So we are the carbon they want to get rid of. The nonsense of the EV cars is clearly going to be starting to play out. Not only did some of them catch fire and you can't put them out, and so some people are no longer able to be insured, from what I understand. We see these massive, great, big dumps where these cars can't be sold. I think in China there's loads of these bloody things all over the place. It's just part of this huge myth that oil is either running out or it's dangerous for us. And firstly, it's not a fossil fuel. That's one of the myths that, you know, we've been told. I think it was Rothschild who said we're going to call it fossil fuel, so therefore it gives the idea of some scarcity. But actually, it's, you dig it out the ground, far lower than the fossil record. And I've also read that it's self-replenishing, so it'll never run out. Now, whether it's polluting is one thing, but we've made huge gains in reducing the polluting side of it. And I'm not saying that the internal combustion engine is the answer to all things. I mean, there are people, and somebody did a video only the other day about a car or a motor that can run on water. And of course, anybody who can do anything that is effectively free energy in that way ought to be giving those patents away for free and flooding the internet so everybody can see it, rather than having somebody swoop down and kill them before that even gets into anybody else, because we've seen that in the past. So there's bound to be new technologies which are going to be much more easier. But of course, it's all part of this net zero thing that one car takes three households' average electricity to charge up overnight, which again is a nonsense. Where are they getting the electricity from? As I mentioned before, they're putting out all these solar panels and then they're dimming the skies. So the solar panels can't get the electricity because they've dimmed the sky. The logic's all over the place. And why, for me, the biggest thing is, why would you be reliant on one energy for everything, electricity, which then means it's easily controllable. And if it goes wrong or the power goes off, you can't charge your car. Surely we want, and we're all told that diversity is the thing. Why can't we have a diversity of different types of energy? And plus the fact, that isn't it true that we had electric cars in something like 1900 and they ran off smaller batteries, lighter batteries? They had a different type of technology and you didn't need kids going down into the earth slaving for these precious metals to run these things, which nobody now wants. I'm not at all surprised. And also, you're sitting in an environment of EMFs, electrical magnetic fields, and everything you do on the electric cars are all traced with all this technology, so they know where you are, when you are. And when these CBDs come in and there's this social credit system related to the food, related to your money, you may find that you can't travel the distances you want because the car won't go there because somebody somewhere has programmed it in. You're not allowed to. No, thanks. You can keep your EV cars. I'll stick with an old Morris Traveller from 1960. Thank you very much.
When I heard Richard Tice from Reform, he was being interviewed and he was asked about car. He said, oh, no, I've got a Prius or I've got a Tesla. And you think, oh, my, just you live in a different planet. It just unbelievable. So yeah, our politicians don't get it 100%. Let's to finish with a picture, a Bob Moran picture, and it is this one, and it is, fear not, my lady, I am signing another online petition as a dragon comes and burns up. What a final thought. What people come to me and they say, oh, sign a petition, and that's how we'll make change. It seems to be an excuse for not actually doing anything, just sitting and filling out a petition and thinking the government will listen to that request instead of actually coming up with some more direct action. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, Richard. Do you think petitions are the way that we get out of this hole?
No, of course. Petitions are absolute complete rubbish. I mean, you're basically accepting the fact that you're a slave because you're having to then knock on the door and say, please, master, I beg of you, will you do something? If you have that attitude that, you know, a group of you are going to go, oh, we've all put our signature on here and we're asking permission for something or we're requesting you to not do it. Democracy, if democracy is a thing that we want to have, then that's not how it works. You know, if we're the ones that are supposed to be in charge. We're the ones that are supposed to have put the government into position to look after us because we can't be bothered to look after ourselves. And there's a lot of things like the infrastructure of things and roads and things. And I don't want to be involved in all of that. I'm quite happy to say you can do that. And I'm quite happy to pay someone to do that if you actually do the things that I want you to do and the rest of the population want you to do, like protect our borders and teach our children wholesome things like we've suggested. But going in and sort of going, oh, I don't know how else, I'll just sign a petition and then hoping for the best and maybe 100,000 people will manage to sign it and then the government will go, oh, look, we've got another of these begging letters. We'll just have an hour or so and waffle about and nothing will ever happen, like everything that happens in, the big decisions are happening behind screens. They're already being done and we just are the ones that have been told about it. So we've got to at some point realize that if we don't turn this round and remind these people that they are our servants, yep, and that we are their masters and unite together on that point, they'll continue to just look at us as if we are the slaves and they'll make the decisions and they'll say you're having more surveillance and you're having more 5G and you're having electric cars and you're going to have these 15-minute cities, all the stuff that nobody's actually ever asked for. I mean, I've never met anyone who says, please, can I have more 5G? Can I have more surveillance? Can you Can I have digital IDs? Can you watch me? Can you control my money? Could I have more injections into my arm? And yet these are the things that we've got. Oh, can you spray the sky and can you put fluoride in the water, please? Because, you know, I really want to be unhealthy and have more pills from Big Pharma. I mean, I'd love to meet these people, but I don't seem to find them. I don't get out much, clearly.
I've yet to meet one. I've yet to meet one. Richard, I appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for giving us your thoughts on all those stories.
Well, I hope that... I'm not up to date with the nuances of the news, but I'm more about, as you said, what's going on behind the scenes to those stories. So, yeah, I hope I've contributed something and not upset any of your viewers.
Oh, well, I'm sure they can. They've got a thick skin. So I'll just show you the picture I did find of the person I will be voting for. And it is that Count Binface. He is actually a candidate in the mayoral elections in London, and I have the awesome privilege and be able to vote for this intergalactic warrior who I believe could turn things around. So that's what I'll be doing with my vote.
It looks like he could have inside that little square there a ULEZ camera hidden in there. You never know.
Could be.
Facial recognition.
I think when I did go past him, he did wave to me and said, "You're wearing a yellow tie. I hope you're not a Lib Dem." So there's someone inside it. It's not just a robot, or it could be the next Tesla robot to take over. But on that, Richard, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to our viewers and listeners for tuning in. We'll be back with you on Monday with Xi Van Fleet discussing her book, Mao's America, and her leaving China behind, the communist regime there, and finding another regime in the States, which apes us. We'll tune in on Monday for Xi Van Fleet. So on that, thank you so much.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list, donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.